Magnum Tape 80-6. Recording general conversation 11 October 1980.
Listen to all this noise out here.
She got a picture of it. Looks to me like we're sitting in Agent Orange in this picture.
That's it. See, you can send up to the internet. See, that's what happened, guys. That's what happened. So we're white, turning yellow.
I hate to bring up the subject, but they informed me that at an earlier branch reunion, all the ladies that were present were kind enough to go in skinny dipping in the pool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wish I had been there. It sure wasn't up at Fort Walton Beach. It was too cold up there.
Yeah.
You remember how cold it was?
It was cold.
Can't seem to encourage it, can I?
No.
But the kids enjoyed it. You know, Cindy, when she went home, or she was going home, she said, Mother, she says, I've got so many friends to take some gifts to. And I was going around the whole beach there in the apartments,
about
picking
10
up little
feet out that way.
Booze bottles, you know, the little ones. So I told her, I said, oh, Mother, you have to pick those up. And I said, well, they're cute. I think they're cute, you know, because they're so
good. Remember where we were last night?
And
paid $1 million for cheap drinks?
You don't remember where you were.
Yeah, you don't remember, do you?
I do, too.
That's how Captain carries that thing around, so he can turn it on the next day to find out where he was.
Somebody told him this morning what a good time he had last night.
Well, my wife won't hear this tape.
I told Al, I said, I wonder if you had an adder in there, you know. I said, don't you try to build too fast in there, you know, like $9.
More on that thing?
Yeah, but I understand somebody didn't pay last night.
Oh,
somebody else had to pay it.
Oh, we paid.
We did too, but somebody didn't.
You're feeling some of the people just bombed out.
Yeah, they just did.
Someone
well, they probably thought it was the $70, you know. A lot of them thought it was the $70.
No, it was somebody owed $4.5.
Oh.
I don't know how that came out, but it's got to be one expensive boat.
Well, but isn't it supposed to be $75 for the whole thing this week?
Or $70.
$70.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Including breakfast.
Yeah.
That was, where is breakfast at, Tom?
Just right around the corner.
Right around the corner. That's
all
right. You know where it is.
30 miles.
Did you have a t-shirt shop?
Yeah.
We'll walk, won't we?
Yeah, we had every place.
When we get there, everything closes.
Watch out, Norma.
What was it? How long did it take to go eat breakfast this morning?
What, about an hour?
Yeah.
What'd you do, get lost?
No, we was looking for the International Pancake
It was down the road.
We found it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, that little place over on the pier is outstanding for $1.39 for a complete breakfast. That's great.
Where is that? That place right around the corner?
Well, I think it's
over on the pier.
It's over on the pier. I don't know how you get there.
What is that?
It's just a restaurant right there on the wharf. But their special for $1.39 is two eggs and bacon and potatoes or grits and toast and coffee and for $1.39. I haven't seen that for a long time.
Oh, yeah. And you're down away from
No. I was riding backwards in the tail end of George's car. I got no idea where that went.
I know.
It was a good breakfast. Because I was a good dinner. Mm-hmm. Some of the best prime ribs there. Mm-hmm.
You weren't here the first night when we went to Papa's.
That's, Papa's said it was great.
Oh, that prime rib was outstanding. The only problem was there was too much of it. I stuffed myself, and I couldn't quit, and I was about that far from being sick because it was too good. Too bad.
I thought you had eaten the salad.
No, no. I had the salad.
Who had the salad?
Jim had the salad.
Who made the salad?
Was it
Jim,
good?
Yeah, Jim and Pat had the salad. Yeah.
How many of you did it take to eat the salad?
Yeah.
That's a big salad.
Oh,
that's
a beautiful salad.
We went in there one time, there was five of us, and we ordered a salad for five, and the waitress says, you don't want a salad for five. She says, order one for two.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough for five.
Right.
It wasn't big.
And, you know, because that's what we had other things, you know, we'd order.
Everybody in the pool.
Fish, yeah. And steak.
Mm.
Oh. Hello. Huh?
Hello. Oh, no, somebody.
Well, let's see, there's one order of prime rib, from Pompano, I think we had Pompano.
Yeah, when I used to
eat fish,
I kind of
did. And I had the Worcester.
Yeah, the Worcester.
With seafood platter.
The Greek.
They have fish.
I was in St. Petersburg about 2 years ago or something, and there was supposed to be a fantastic place to eat somewhere between St. Pete and here. And I don't remember the name of it. I think it was Fisherman's Wharf or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I still love
it. It changed her name.
We have, what, 3 or 4 sorties a day? Usually 3, wasn't it?
Now, when I was there, we flew 2 lifts a day. We flew an early lift and a late lift. That's all we could get before it got too hot.
When was that?
That was 67.
Okay, well, in 66.
But see, we were flying an 8-shipper first lift and then 2 4-shippers second lift. And oh, no, an 8-shipper and a 4-ship first lift and 3 4-shippers the second lift. So we were covering 5 targets.
I know every time they would come back from the sortie, there'd be quite a few bullet holes. And you know,
hey, let me get started on this thing. So it's all down here. Okay, what was your time period in Vietnam?
I was there. I'm trying to think, it was August or September '66. And I left a year later.
Okay. I didn't even ask. What's your name?
James Arthur.
Okay. And what were you doing in Vietnam?
I was a crew chief on aircraft 628.
Okay. Was that one of the ones that had a particular name on it, or
no? It wasn't patches or anything.
Okay. Now there were a couple that had some names applied to it. You know, one of the things we haven't discussed, everybody keeps talking about all the hits, but there's no record anywhere because the maintenance records were destroyed. You know, the old 90-day bit about the hits themselves. They know how many, but there's not per bird and you know where what kind of you got stuck with repairing them, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We're seeing to that they
yeah.
Give them
okay. What kind of hits did you see?
Well, probably the worst one on my aircraft was in the spar, the left wing spar, right where Jones fuselage, and they couldn't get that one out, so it just left there.
did they continue
flying it like that?
Mm.
I don't know if you knew about it or not.
That's one thing every air crew should know. No, as an ex-maintenance officer, yeah, sometimes you get it. Well, what in general, where's the hits?
Well,
wings, fuselage.
Yes, it was mostly fuselage, right. And the tail section, fuselage. And one day at Da Nang, they got a bullet through the wheel well and hit the tire and blew it out, so it had to come in with a flat tire. But most of the time, it was just mostly minor damage. Now one time landing at Da Nang, we were going up there to Da Nang, so I was flying my own aircraft in the back as a passenger. And weather was bad, we had to make a long, low approach. Well, as we did, we were crossing this river, I don't remember the name of it, but you probably know the one I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
And my assistant crew chief was sitting up front looking out the window on the right-hand side of the fuselage, and I was sitting in the back near the ramp on the left-hand side. Well, making that long little approach, I got up and was taking pictures through the door, the window, the back door, at towards the ocean. And about that time, we got hit. And we had, I don't know what caliber, but it's, I think it's equivalent to about 30 caliber, coming through the ramp. And one of the superstructures there got hit and just splattered the side of the fuselage where I was, like buckshot. Luckily, I wasn't sitting there. I was taking pictures where I should have been. I should have been sitting down.
Good but, time to take pictures.
Right. Yeah. But my assistant sitting up front was looking down, and he saw the guys on the beach at the river there, the bank, shooting at us. And so after landing, the security people talked to him, and wasn't very long after that that they captured the VCs. They were sitting up 150s down at that time, which would have played hell
had
they got set up.
Yeah.
But that was another occasion, you know, type of hits that we would get. Sometimes in the engine nacelle area, sometimes in the engine, but usually in the fuselage.
What about the fuel tanks?
Yeah, I was just going to say, occasionally we had shots in fuel tanks, and they were self-sealing, so...
As long as it wasn't leaking, you let it go.
That's right. They would continue. If it had another sortie, it would go ahead and complete that sortie, come back, and then they would repair it later. But during the day, any of those shots, a lot of times the airplanes would take off with the, you know, without any repairs until after the, you know, the day. And then at night they would repair the aircraft, throw those scab patches on or what have you, you know.
What about control cabling, any of that? 123 had dual cabling, right?
Trying to remember. I don't remember.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember your bird having any control cables shot out?
Yes. That time that we got shot rain at Da Nang, I think we had control cable damaged on. I think it was just trim tab, I believe. It wasn't anything too important. It's been so long ago. Yeah. It would have been nice to have written all this stuff down as it happened like a diary.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah.
At that time, you know, you're not thinking about that.
And it's a long time ago, yeah. What, you got any idea of, you know, how many hits your bird took while you were there? While you were crewing it?
I never kept count of that.
Just too busy occurrence. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, the first, when I got there, they were trying to build up the squadron. I think it was 22 aircraft, and we were kept busy. The first, we was about 4 or 5 months, we were kept busy working 12, sometimes 8 hours, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then it slacked off. So we were quite busy, and, you know, you just didn't think of those things at that time. You were just too busy trying to work and survive.
What about the maintenance support from the other base organizations? Did you get any help out of them at all, or?
I wouldn't know much about that, other than, I mean, for the squad as a whole,
yeah.
I wouldn't, but for my aircraft, I did. I don't think I ever had any problems getting support. They had the personnel, and they did a good job. I can't recall ever having any problems.
What about normal maintenance on the 120? How would you compare the normal maintenance over there to other airplanes you crewed? I mean, was it easier to maintain, harder to maintain?
Well, the 123 I never worked on before until I got over there. And that was a new aircraft to me. And I found it a pretty good aircraft to work on, really. It was most of the areas that you had to get into were easy to get into. It's pretty well, you know, well open. It wasn't like some of these aircraft where you had a very tight space to get into and all that. I found the, well, the biggest problem on the 123 was the fuel tank, external tank. Sometimes they were hard to get up into the shack,
right? No.
One time we had to use a V4 stand. and jack up different ends of it and keep jockeying around until we got up.
Make it like a cradle?
Yeah. But that was probably the biggest difficulty that we had.
What about the housing conditions while you were there? Where were the troops housed?
Well, we were stationed at, of course, that's Thompson Newton, and we moved to San Juan.
Yeah.
Well, at Thompson Newton, it wasn't too good because we had to live downtown, take the bus in the morning, and it would be dark in the morning, and you're standing on the street corner waiting for the bus to come by, and some old woman or kid would ride along on a bicycle, and you didn't know if they were going to toss a hand grenade at you or not. It was sort of a psychological thing. You know, you kept pre-rolling your toes. And, of course, they had, at the entrance to the apartment house or the motel, I mean, hotel that you were staying, they'd have a sandbag area there where you could jump behind in case anyone started firing at you. But if a kid or an old lady would come by and toss a hand grenade at you, well, then you wouldn't have much time to jump behind that, you know, because you were standing in the corner there.
Did most troops feel pretty insecure in town?
I never asked anyone about it. It's just my own observation and feelings.
You felt insecure.
Right.
Yeah.
But then about 3 months after I got there, we moved up to Benoit. And then we spent a lot of time up to Nain. Now at Benoit, we had maybe a little bit better setup there, being our home base. One of the fellas went out and got a refrigerator. I don't know where he got it from. So we had cold beer. If it wasn't cold beer, I probably would have starved to death. Because the NCOs had to live on the economy. I guess the officers did too. Right?
Yeah.
And I just couldn't eat some of that stuff over there. And if it wasn't for the cold beer, you know, and then coming back at night like that, tired, sweaty, dirty, hungry, you grab a couple cans of beer, and before the night was over, you'd have a pyramid of beer cans in front of you. You know? And I think I survived on beer over there. That was the only thing that kept me going. Now at the Nang, it was, I think I prefer being at Benoit as far as living facilities. Because you had your own, you had your locker and everything there. Whenever you went up to Da Nang, it was TDY, and you just, you know, wasn't the same.
Kind of hotbedding it up there, no place permanent, really.
Right.
You know. What about, what kind of working hours? The air crews talk about they could only spray in the morning, and then about noon, from noon until the next morning, they literally had nothing to do except drink and
well,
whatever.
Right. They had enough during the day with the amount of sorties that they flew and the amount of hits that they took to. I think that, I don't know because I wasn't a flight crew member, but when they were landing in the evening, I never saw anyone around, flight crew members. They all took off, and
yeah.
You know. But as far as the ground crew members were concerned, most of the guys I knew, we didn't go anywhere to town or anything. We just pretty much stayed where we were. For one thing, we were too damn tired to do anything.
Well, how long would it take you after a bird came down, after they're done for the mission for the day, how long would it take you to get it ready for
the
next
day? Sometimes it would be quite late. You had servicing to do, of the fuel, the oil, the herbicide. A lot of times
the ground crew handled the reherbid?
Yes, I've serviced the tank many times. After each sortie, as soon as the plane would land, we either service the gas or the herbicide, depending on what was available first. And so we handled all of that.
Okay, you're working with herbicide. Had they issued you any special handling equipment to work with herbicide?
Oh, no.
You just treated it just as if you were pumping out gas,
right,
or whatever?
I threw that hose over my shoulder and pulled it into the airplane and served as a tank, and it would drip all down the side of it.
Did anybody ever say anything to you about, that this stuff might be potentially hazardous?
I don't think so. I can't really recall. I believe something may have been said about getting it in your mouth or your eyes or something like that, but as far as being a health hazard, of course, I don't recall that.
You get to have gas in your mouth or eyes,
oh,
you're
yes.
Gonna
right.
Same thing, yeah. Someone may have, but I doubt it, because if they did, I'm pretty sure I would remember it.
Well, what about the Vietnamese? Didn't you have Vietnamese handlers out there to work on the herbicide pits, or did they help at all?
The only Vietnamese I saw around there that I can recall were the ones who flew occasionally with the different airplanes as, I guess, observers, I suppose. But as far as help, I don't, I can't recall any Vietnamese helping out there.
Well, how was this herbicide you put on board the plane? What form did you get it? Was it in a big tank and little drums? Or?
Well, at Da Nang, we had one end of the runway or taxiway set up with big tanks. And then we just take it, a hose from the tank out to the aircraft. We just attach the aircraft up by the large tanks and run it from the hose out there. But at Da Nang, I can't recall. I mean, at Van Wan, I can't recall. I believe it was... I can't remember whether it was trucks or we didn't have a pit set up. We had a pit set up there at Da Nang where you could taxi your aircraft up to. But at Ben Hoa, I can't remember how that was brought up there. This been so long.
To be honest, I don't remember either.
You don't remember either?
No. I tried to visualize it the other day, and I really
can't. I got out of service in 1970. When I retired, and I kind of left all that behind me. I started a new life.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, the first time I've been with the military people and talking about it, and it will probably slowly come back to me, you know, after thinking about it.
Yeah, one of those things you want to close out.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think a lot of the stuff you just want to forget and say, well, that's over with, you know.
Yeah. What, you not only got the airplane ready after its mission, but you had to get it out there and get it pre-flight and everything before they launched, right? Or did you have another crew that took it?
Well, you had assistants, and sometimes you'd split up the working hours, but quite often you would need both people.
What about, now you say assistant, what about manning? Were you fat on manning, short on manning?
No, I don't believe we were fat on manning, no. For one thing, say my airplane would be off flying, I would help somebody else, and vice versa. Sometimes they'd be helping me while my airplane was flying, so we kind of help each other. I don't think we were overmanned, for sure, that's for sure.
Who did the heavy stuff that would fall in the field maintenance squadron area, like periodics and things like that? Is that the line crews, or do you have a separate field maintenance setup?
Well, when it came to periodics, I think they sent the airplanes back to the Philippines, I believe. For the big one,
yeah. How much trouble did you have, if any, or did you even fool with the spray system itself, the engine and the tanks?
Not too much trouble other than the valves that release the spray. Sometimes they would clog up. In fact, after every sortie, you check them over because you always find one or two that weren't, you know, spraying.
Again, you were handling, cleaning them.
Just like plumbing. If you take a spigot off or something, you can get water. Well, you same with your herbicide. You get the herbicide. Oh, it was. We were always in contact with it. Spills or servicing, repairing the plumbing. So you were always exposed.
What general impressions have you got? What do you think is important for people to know about the ranch? What was the esprit de corps? What did the troops feel about it?
I really don't know. I think it was a good outfit myself, personally. I mean, the guys really seemed like they were really into believing what they were doing was right and helping one another. I think it was a rather closely organization. I know all the enlisted personnel, we've always had a damn good time, you know, and helping one another. You know, like Bruce, after the last sort of day, I understand they used to get together and have a ball. Of course, you couldn't blame them for going out every day and getting shot at. When you come back in the evening, you feel like doing something, you know, to take your mind off of
it. Any excuse for a drink.
Well.
Well, what about the supervisory, maintenance officer, line chief, flight chief? What?
I think Range Center had a damn good organization all the way up the line. I can't remember anybody having any really complaints. You know?
Since you were a tenant, you still didn't feel like you were an orphan outfit, huh?
Oh no. Well, that was quite an experience for me. In fact, I was in SAC for 6 years, and I think the ranch hand people probably had more esprit de corps than the SAC people I was associated with.
Were you crewing recips in SAC or just?
I was crewing recips in KC-97.
What was, you flew a whole full tour in Nam, right?
All except for 1 month. I went 11 months. I came back, my father died, came back for a month.
No moral judgment, but was the general impression of the people where they ought to be there, they shouldn't be there? Was there any feeling at all of that way at all? Or was it just a job
over there?
Yeah.
I never heard any really real complaints. It seemed like everyone, you know, understood that it was a job that had to be done, and they were just there to do it. I mean, that's the way I thought, and I never heard anyone else say the contrary to that.
Yeah. Got anything that you want to add?
No, maybe just I think that I thought that Ranch Inn had a good group of people there. It was really great being with them over there. Just sorry that we had a no-win type war, because there were people there who died, but to me it would seem that they died for no reason. But I guess there must have been a reason, but I really can't see a no-win type war, personally. If there's going to be a war, it should be fought with intentions to win. If you're not going to fight a war with those intentions, you shouldn't be over there to fight.
Can I agree with that?